Recycling is all about repetition, or at least it aims to be. What you just heard was the journey of a plastic bottle from vending machine to consumer to recycling processor. And ideally, that would happen with all the materials we make. But plastic, like many others, unfortunately does not work that way. According to the UN Environment Programme, about half the plastic that's produced in the world, around 400 million tonnes, is used just once and thrown away.
Given all the talk about the need to recycle over the last decade, especially plastic, this is very, very disappointing.
As things stand, we're really going to be watching a lot more wildlife shows, with sea life tragically swallowing or becoming entangled in what is relatively a new material. It's caused a lot of trouble in its short existence, and it threatens our own. And that's the problem with plastic recycling. So many things you think could be recycled, like film or crisp packets, you all know how much I love crisps, unfortunately can't be. Well, not currently anyway. Or you get those labels that say recycle at your nearest big store, an option that simply might not be available depending on where you live.
Yeah, that's the part that can be very irritating. I want to be a good citizen and I want to play my part, but a lot of people might not be able to get to their nearest big store for a range of reasons. Or to only just walk to, you know, the local one. So that makes carrying all that waste a bit tricky and not particularly nice. And what am I meant to do with all that waste until I do a big shop? Store aside and let it fester?
Yeah, that's gross, Sam. I mean, you're right, it's not practical. The onus has been on the consumer for far too long. And the businesses that sell these products need to take more responsibility, in my opinion. At least some stores are doing refillable goods now and holding manufacturers to task.
Yeah, I think the manufacturing level is where the most change is needed. But the level above that leads to people like us, the chemists, who create these materials in the first place. I know a lot of material chemists who are passionate about changing the structures of materials into something more sustainable.
I couldn't agree more, Sam. And we'll be sharing their work and trash talking in general about recycling in this edition of Swittering On. Hello, I'm Mariam Rifode-Blees, and I'm the Head of Education at the Salters Company and Institute in London.
And I'm Samuel Dada, or Sam, and I'm a PhD student at the University of Cambridge in the Department of Chemistry.
We know chemists can do everything. And in this episode, we'll be joined by two guests, a scientist at the top of their game on the subject who knows a lot more about it than us, and a student also on the subject who wants to learn how to address these issues.
In every episode, we will do our best to introduce the main topic under discussion, then pass over to an expert and a student to have a conversation about the past, present, and future of the science at the heart of it.
And as tempting as it might be for the two of us to just sit and nod along, we'll be joining in with the conversation as well.
We are going to be breaking things down for you so you can understand it. So at the risk of embarrassing ourselves, at the end of each episode, we are going to be quizzed by the experts on the key takeaway from the conversations in the expert test.
The expert test.
Yes, we will, Sam. And even though I really hated exams at school, we will be keeping score every week and throughout the whole series to see who out of the two of us will be the winner of
the expert test.
So we're talking about recycling today, and we know that recycling is a process of converting waste materials into new products. And it's got a long history that dates to ancient times. In terms of chemistry, the recycling process involves breaking down materials into their constituent parts and then reassembling them into new products.
And here's an interesting fact about recycling. One ton of paper can save 17 trees, 7,000 gallons of water, and 463 gallons of oil. This is the power that recycling has in the conservation of our natural resources. So we know this stuff, but often there are barriers to making this happen on a bigger scale.
The reality is, Sam, that chemists have to find practical, sellable answers to recycling. And sellable is the key word. Anyone working in the field of sustainability really acknowledges the fact that the economic aspects matter. Businesses need to be able to sell this stuff, and we have to want it.
Yeah, that's so true. Our listeners might also have not heard about downcycling. It's not discussed enough, and it's quite different from the intent of recycling, which is meant to be entirely circular. So, for example, a U-shirt that gets thrown away ideally will be turned back into a shirt of the same quality, but that rarely happens. The material gets used to make inferior products. So we're not really turning those materials back into the equivalent product. The fibers of the shirt might end up, you know, being used to make a mattress somewhere. To truly recycle would mean changing the base parts of the product. So only 1% of the textiles are actually truly recycled. The rest are downcycled.
So you've talked about downcycling, Sam. I'm going to bring in mechanical recycling because that's what most people think about when they think about recycling. Those big machines with conveyor belts that turn materials into pulp, like we heard at the start. But as our listeners are hopefully realising, recycling is just an umbrella term for lots of different ways of reusing materials. You also talked about the shirt. Well, we know that fibres are polymers, the base material of most clothing. Sam, I'm getting a bit worried, to be honest, because I think there's going to be quite a lot to remember later when we go head-to-head in
the expert test. Yeah, I think it's pretty neck and neck on the scoreboard at the moment.
I'm feeling pretty confident today, Sam. I think I'm quietly confident, actually. I think I'm going
to
win.
And if this happens to be the first time you're joining us, you probably have no idea what we're talking about or the show's format. Okay, so I'll sum it up. After a bit of chat between us, we move on to the conversation where we're joined by an expert and a student to help us answer some questions. We then ask the experts to sum up the topic in just 1 minute during what we call the breakdown to help us make sense of it all.
Before returning to the studio to finish the episode with me and Sam going head to head in
the expert test.
And on that note, I think it's time we listen to someone who really knows a thing or two about recycling. We are absolutely delighted to welcome our guest expert today, Professor Veena Sahajwala, all the way from the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia. Professor Sahajwala is the founding director of the Centre for Sustainable Materials Research and Technology at the University of New South Wales. Welcome, Veena. It's brilliant to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so looking forward to this conversation with you.
We're also joined by William Terry Wright, who is currently a PhD student at the University of Bristol studying synthetic chemistry.
Thanks very much for having me back.
Hi, Will. It's good to see you.
So each episode, we ease our guests into it by just asking them the same two questions. So, Veena, if you were an element, what would you be and why?
Oh, that's an easy one for me, you know, because I love to look at all kinds of elements. But I've got to say, I've got a bit of a soft spot for this incredibly amazing element that is so important to our lives. It's iron. FE. When we go to get our blood test done, you've got to know whether you've got enough iron in your system. Then you realize, if you're a vegetarian like me, that no, you don't quite have enough iron. But on the other hand, you think about this amazing metal, when it becomes steel, it's literally the foundation of so many things we need in our lives. Whether it's our buildings or our cars. And of course, this is why I love iron.
Oh, that's incredible. Incredible. What about yourself, Will?
I'm not sure I can top that, but I'm also going to go for another metal. I'm going to go for lithium. I'm choosing lithium because in the chemistry lab, as a synthetic chemist, we can use lithium to do lots of interesting reactions and join molecules together and take things apart.
Oh, wonderful. Love that. One last question for you, Veena, in terms of a way of easing you in. Who is your favourite fictional scientist?
Fictional scientist, my absolute favourite. But I like to think about this person who is, of course, I have to say, he's real because he's like cool. But I think, you know, the coolest thing I love about what someone commented to me once was like going, ah, you've got this crazy hair happening. You're like the crazy scientist. And you know where I'm going with this? I was literally, you know, somebody was like, just like Einstein. Like, oh my God. Because it's like, how cool is that? I don't care if it was my hair. So there you go. That was the coolest thing ever. And so I'm going to have to go with that.
Oh, I love that. I love that. What about yourself, Will?
Again, I'm not going to be able to top that. I'm going to go a little bit different. I'm going to say he's more of an inventor rather than a scientist, but I'm going to go for Wallace from Wallace and Gromit.
Oh, that's interesting. Interesting.
Built a rocket to the moon and the moon was made of cheese. What could be better?
How creative and totally inspiring, Will. Now that we've got the serious questions out of the way, let's get into it.
Thank you very much, Mariama, for that fantastic introduction. My first question to you, Veena, is would you be able to tell us a little bit about yourself and your research?
When I sort of think about how my research and my life and everything is all kind of in a funny sort of way interconnected, as someone who gets really passionate about, you know, the fact that the planet is so full of waste materials and the fact that we even call it waste, I just remember as a kid growing up in Mumbai, that was something just that it just fascinated me because I'd love to be able to really look at all the things that were kind of just thrown away in the rubbish pile. And the funny thing is, after all of these years, guess what? I don't stop doing that. You know, when the local council comes around asking people to kind of put stuff out on the curbside and they're picking it up, sometimes I have to literally stop and kind of look at it, take a photo and go, oh my gosh, no, this cannot be called rubbish. This is like seriously good stuff. So that's stuff that we could like have another life and many, many more lives. And so the fact that, you know, we go all the way from simple things that are there in our everyday items, like our furniture pieces from our homes, to the more complex electronic devices. I mean, fundamentally, the work that we do now, the Smart Center, is all about saying that materials are inherently that make up all the products that we use in our everyday lives. So your products might, you know, stop working or become obsolete, but that doesn't mean that basically those materials, whether they are metals or ceramics or plastics, doesn't mean that those materials are no longer useful. So really, for us at the Smart Centre at UNSW here in Sydney, it's about looking at that entire ecosystem. Every bit of material that goes into making a product, when that product no longer works, how do you then unmake something? Mm-hmm. If you unmake, you can then go back and remake. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine if this entire circle of materials and products, you know, if we were able to do the unmaking and the remaking, then really nothing should go to landfill. And no matter how many times your design might change and the systems might change, but those fundamental building blocks, which is our materials, will be around to provide that important role that they do in the products that we see today and all kinds of important products that we know are yet to come to life. Mm. But really, when we have those building blocks, there are no limits to our imagination. And that's really the pretty cool thing that we love talking about at Smart Center. Mm.
Is that, do you envisage a future where we reuse everything or recycle everything?
Totally. Like, I mean, you know, we should actually be talking about a future where we recognize that we don't have to see recycling as this one little nice thing to do from, oh, it's good, we care for the environment, therefore we recycle. But we should see it as the absolute foundation of manufacturing everything. And if we can see it that way, if the solutions are not available today, then yes, we need to design those solutions. We need to think about that entire ecosystem of how do we take those materials that might be available now in an obsolete format, but how do we then effectively bring that back into life? So how do we bring together all these important questions around end-of-life materials and effectively recycling, reforming, remanufacturing? And then also thinking about testing and making sure, like anything else, when we manufacture something, we test it, we make sure it's fit for purpose. But we're not just talking about making materials and products that are fit for purpose. How about we also start talking about whether our factories are going to be fit for purpose? And if our factories are not fit for purpose because they were kind of designed, you know, with mined materials in mind, well, you know what? Maybe that's what we need to do. We need to make that point that what if our factories could be redesigned in a way that they were also agile? So we can imagine a future, absolutely, Will. We can imagine a future where we'll be taking all kinds of materials. We'll be laterally connecting, you know, inputs from end of life from one particular factory, and that's going in and feeding into some other material. You know, all of these things. Our green steel is a classic example. Bringing in waste tires as an alternative to coal and coke. All of these things are green ceramics. Bringing in waste glass and textiles and bringing that into a whole new surface that's made from waste glass and textiles. But why would you call it a waste when it is actually able to do the job that you want tiles to do? So whether you want to put it into your floors or your walls, just because you're not able to wear your clothes one day because they've been torn and they've fallen apart and they're no longer fit for wear, imagine if your walls could wear your clothes. How cool would that be?
That's already very inspiring. I'm already envisaging an incredible future. You briefly mentioned some things that I'm going to ask you about a little bit later on. But first, I want to kind of go back to basics. If I put a piece of plastic, for example, in the recycling, where does it go and how is it kind of broken down and where does it end up? Does it end up in a plastic bottle or is it downcycled, we briefly heard about?
Yeah, look, I mean, because there are so many different kinds of plastics that do so many different functions, whether it's a plastic bottle or indeed it could be, you know, plastic filaments that get used in 3D printing. It could be so many different applications. There are plastics in our cars, in our electronic devices. They all have different functions. So we have to start to see it from that lens that we can't just assume that all plastics are the same. And you know what? If we just collect all plastics in this one big generic plastic box, that it's going to magically come back to life as that product again. We have to put in that effort right up front in saying when we are collecting end-of-life plastics, we need to collect it and have that supply chain already ready to provide that as a feedstock for a manufacturer who can use that material. So at the moment, if we're not careful, we might end up in a situation where we get many different kinds of plastics that might get mixed up. And sadly, when that happens, of course, you know, it really makes it difficult for somebody who wants to do remanufacturing to be able to go, well, wait, you know, I can't exactly use this because there's a lot of contamination. There's cross-contamination in there. So even if something like a PET water bottle that is totally recyclable, you know, might get cross-contaminated with some of the other plastics that shouldn't be in that stream. And I think to me, these are important considerations. If we all understand that entire system of the fact that ultimately manufacturing anything, including those made from recycled content, have to be properly managed, have to be properly controlled, and we have to see it like anything else, supply chains have to be well established, then of course, we should be able to talk about in a completely transparent manner as to what materials are coming in, how they're being collected, and where is the destination. And that will motivate people to actually take care about recycling. Because once I get it, I know, if I take care and I drop it off in the correct place, maybe there's a place where a particular kind of electronic waste, which contains plastics, is being collected. That would be awesome. So we can imagine a future where all these specific types of plastics are not seen as problematic. I mean, just because your printer, which is made out of plastic, is no longer working, doesn't mean that there was something, you know, fault of that particular kind of plastic material. We just discard it and go, well, that's a problem now. No, but what if you could take that, you know, printer, and that plastic material was appropriately provided to a manufacturer who could then go, ah, I know exactly what's in that plastic, right? Okay, I can now put that in as a raw material for my manufacturing. So start to see how the language of the fact that it's now no longer a waste, but it's a raw material. And that would be pretty cool if we could achieve that outcome for all kinds of materials.
Veena, you mentioned PET. I wonder if you could just break that down for us, excuse the pun, for our listeners who might not know what PET is.
Yeah, absolutely. Polyethylene terephthalate. And that's what PET stands for. So when people might be looking to identify it, they might see in that triangle the resin code number one. And sometimes manufacturers will also put PET next to it. But you know what? Even if you don't necessarily know what that PET stands for, what you can do is that go and look at the symbols, go and look at the numbers, and then you might be able to online find all that information that goes, oh, wait, okay, but now number five, that's different, you know, so that's polypropylene. So if you've got now all of these different kinds of, you know, codes with, of course, the kinds of polymer, and you're sort of feeling a little bit lost and feeling a bit overwhelmed, you can always connect with your local government that might be collecting these wastes and ask the question, do you have days on which you collect this? Can I drop it off somewhere? Is there a system that allows me to take care of these different kinds of polymers? So the fact that we're already starting to think where the pull is going to come from, we can play our part. And environmentally, that's the right thing to do, because we're now creating, you know, a market for those materials that we care for. By creating our market, we're actually making sure it never goes to landfill. And guess what? By doing that, we're creating new jobs. That innovation and the science connectivity with how we care for our environment, but we also care for the fact that science and innovation and technology will ultimately allow us to create all those innovative solutions. So yeah, some plastics may already have a recycling solution. Some may not, but that's okay, because this is how the conversation has to start.
You've really highlighted the education piece there and really painted the journey for us. That's brilliant. Thank you, Veena.
And does that mean then that some plastics are better than others? And if so, does it mean that manufacturers should take more responsibility for the products that they're making and what happens to those products after they've, you know, reached their end of life?
Yeah, look, absolutely. Well, I mean, what we're really talking about here is a lot of different people in that ecosystem taking that responsibility. So indeed, if we were imagining, you know, the case in point being, you know, a plastic that is coming from e-waste, electronic waste, things like our printers, that people might see it as complex and difficult to recycle. But it could well be that somebody who is now a retailer who's selling that could actually take the responsibility. Even if they don't know what to do in terms of remanufacture, they should then connect with the remanufacturer who might be able to say, ah, actually, you know what, I think I could use those types of products. And indeed, one of our microfactories that is all about creating eco-filaments, plastic filaments from waste that then becomes a feedstock for 3D printing. But here's a classic example where that waste might not be worth a lot, but that filament is now a highly expensive and useful feedstock for 3D printing. So by having a manufacturer who's able to convert that, you know, obsolete printer, for example, into plastic filaments and then on-sell that, means we've now created that market pool that says, I don't need to make new plastic filaments all the time if I can bring those products back in. And this is where, of course, it comes down to retailers, manufacturers, everybody playing a part in showing to their customers that they care for the environment. Yes, of course, it's about business. And yes, it's about, you know, the economy. But we can also create a whole new green economy that enables this kind of recycling and remanufacturing to come to life. So economy doesn't just have to be built off the back of the premise that we had before, which is we just need to kind of, you know, make things all the time out of new materials. But what if we could keep all these materials churning in our economy, in our society, and we then kept them away from landfill? Then even if something is complex, you know, the kind of plastic we're talking about, where the answer may not be that obvious, we will actually inspire each other to go out and look for solutions.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I love your vision, Veena. And one thing that comes to mind now for me is, what is kind of holding us back? Because, you know, we already have this kind of, you know, innovation infrastructure, we have the mindset, right, that we know we have the technologies, but what is actually holding us back from getting to that point where we can actually implement this?
Yeah, Sam, you know, I mean, this is it. Any time in life when we start to talk about new things, people do get a little bit, you know, worried, you know, because it's suddenly we're saying, oh, wait a minute, but, you know, this is going to need so many pieces of the puzzle that have to come together. But this is the beauty of when we start to actually talk to each other and learn from each other, it could well be that somebody who's looking to set up a new business, you know, maybe it is. Let's take this particular example of offering 3D printing services. There are lots of places where there's prototyping going on, manufacturing going on. Now, imagine if maker spaces and manufacturing spaces could actually say, we're going to first and foremost go and source recycled filaments. So this is one of those simple choices that we can make. So sometimes it doesn't have to be a complicated solution. It can start with that simple choice that we all make in the way we choose to spend our money, in the way we choose to do things, whether it's in our homes or whether it's in our businesses. And whether, you know, a student or a budding entrepreneur or somebody who loves innovation goes, wait a minute, I see an opportunity here. I see an opportunity to take that problematic waste and actually seeing this technological development create basically a whole new system that allows me to pull in waste from one source. I can be that aggregation point. I can actually now be part of the supply chain. But you're in a way joining the dots. That is so critical to enable these solutions to come to life. So I guess, Sam, sometimes it is asking exactly the kind of question that you've asked, which is, how do we make it happen?
Thank you very much.
You've briefly alluded to it a couple of times, but can I ask, what is a microfactory and what role does it play in this future where we recycle everything?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked about a microfactory. How long do we have, Will? Oh, look, I mean, you know, the reason why, you know, back in the day when I was sort of thinking, oh, you know, we need to do things locally, we need to do things regionally, because a lot of these waste materials, these end-of-life products, we generate them all over the world, no matter where we are. So the fact that we could be creating a local ecosystem or a regional system that allows us to process as much as possible our waste locally, use it for manufacturing. And therefore, if we did that locally, we would then be enabling our communities, our local businesses, to actually take advantage of the fact that they are going to be now a lot more affordable. And if I know that my supply chains are going to come from my local region and all of that, then I can actually plan for the fact that, look, you know, I don't have to set up a big factory at the start. In fact, one of the key things we wanted to do with our microfactory is start with that fundamental approach that you can make it modular. If you make it modular, you can always grow later. You can add more modules later. But the advantage of a microfactory, you know, in addition to the fact that fundamentally it's predominantly based on waste materials as the input feedstock and creating high quality products, microfactories are really designed to be very agile so that you can actually be responsive to the needs of the region. And so in our microfactories, we always say that you could have different modules also manufacturing different kinds of products, whether they are indeed different kinds of plastics or ceramics. So this is the whole reason why when we set it up at the point, we said, right, we've got to walk the talk. So we set one up in our basement at UNSW. So you know what? I mean, we don't necessarily make music in our basement, but we know how to run a micro factory.
And how's it going, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah. Oh, it's, you know, I think to me what's been really, really kind of heartwarming is, you know, the feedback and the engagement from various local councils and communities and businesses that we've had has been absolutely tremendous. So we've been busy over the last couple of years, you know, setting up these at an industrial scale, different modules for different operators. And we've set them up in regional town, you know, a town here called Nowra, about 2.5 hours south of Sydney. But that's an example where, you know, right there where the waste is being collected at the local waste site. And of course, you know, right next to it is our microfactory. And like, how cool is that? You know, when these, you know, bits of broken glass come in, it's got its destination next door, right there. It's in a microfactory. It comes out as a beautiful green ceramic tile. So we're really excited that, you know, we also are thrilled that not only can we make it and run it, and our industry partners, people like Kandui Technologies here in Australia, who are the operators and our technology partners, you know, the local government, Shoalhaven City Council, who we collaborate with. But I guess the most important thing is all of us as users. If we don't have people who are willing to use it and give it a go, we don't have a viable product, you know, even though it's technically going to do the job. But at the end of the day, you know, if a product is able to be used by people, and it's like everything else in the early days, you know, we're coming out of a university environment. It's an innovation that is born from the Smart Center. It's an innovation that was born out of our research. And we're now, you know, commercializing this technology. It doesn't matter how big or small, you know, you are in your journey, and at any point in time, it's the buzz and the thrill of taking that science, the technology, bringing it to life and, you know, translating that knowledge. And of course, ultimately, we can see how this technology is going to really enable housing to be delivered, you know, and all the building products that we need. So we know that this is important and relevant, not just in Australia, but right across the world. So I'm just really thrilled that, you know, in terms of creating impact in our own small way, you know, when you start on a journey, you never know where it takes you. But that's the beauty of getting on a journey and bringing your communities and your collaborators and everyone with you on the journey. That journey can be the best fun ever.
So I think we've got time for one last question. Of all the things we've talked about today, what inspires you and what excites you most about your research and the future of recycling?
Well, you know, what inspires me are, you know, young people like yourselves, you know, Will and Sam and, you know, students in so many different parts of the world who I get to talk to, and including kids in high school who really get excited about recycling. And to me, that's really inspiring, because I know that if we're going to have optimism and hope and excitement, all of these things together, yes, sometimes, you know, the future can feel a bit overwhelming. But when you see people bringing their hearts and minds, and young people so passionate to want to come and learn and engage and play a part and inspire others, I think to me, that's the best thing, you know, that could have happened to me in my life, that I get to meet amazing, amazing people and the incredible people we have at the Smart Center who just love, you know, doing the work we do in the labs and making a difference to our environment and to the lives of people on this planet.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Lina, that was incredible. I think you've just got my brain buzzing about all the things we can do and how we can activate our agency to be citizens that really want to make a difference and can make a difference. I have to say, working with Will and Sam makes me feel much younger than I am. So I'm glad that you've identified them as young and the future. Wasn't that incredible, Sam?
It was. I'm truly inspired. I feel like I have hope and I feel like I can actually make an impact and be purposeful in everything I do in terms of recycling.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Veena, for all the interesting points that you raise. I feel so inspired and I feel like I can, you know, go into my real world and make an impact in my society in a very small way. It's now time for us to get to the part of the podcast in which we call the breakdown, where you have to give a 1-minute summary about everything that you've talked about so our listeners can have maybe a take-home message in terms of something that they can digest.
You know, I just sort of feel that what this whole conversation is all about. It's about not only understanding chemistry and understanding the importance and the relevance of science and technology, but it's also about understanding how you can make a difference to our planet by recycling, by remanufacturing, by understanding how we can all play a part and thinking about innovative ideas and solutions. And talking about my all-time favorite type of factory, a micro factory. So I think we're going to be super excited about the conversations, which is about making all kinds of products, like green ceramics, for example, in a micro factory. And of course, the fact that we can bring in waste materials, we can recycle and remanufacture and create fit-for-purpose products in a fit-for-purpose micro factory is got to be the icing on the cake. So you can bring your hearts and minds, bring your passion, and bring everything that you really care about from the point of view of our planet and the people, and enjoy this conversation.
Thank you very much.
Veena, thank you for that brilliant breakdown, which I think really encapsulates everything that we've talked about today. So now it's time for our wonderful expert, Veena, to ask us some questions in
the expert test.
Will, I hope you're ready.
Absolutely, your pencil ready is sharpened. Ready to keep score.
To keep score. Veena, if you wouldn't mind asking us some questions from emerging from what we've been talking about, just to test our listening skills.
So now, do you remember when I talk about green ceramics, what kind of waste goes into making these beautiful green ceramic tiles?
Oh, is it glass?
Glass!
Yes. Mariama gets the point.
I'm on fire!
Okay, now when I did mention a little bit about, in passing, green steel, I did say that we were looking to replace. What kinds of traditional feedstock materials that we were looking to replace in the making of steel? I did also say that there was an element.
Iron.
Iron, that's it. Must have iron. Absolutely. Well done. Well done, Sam.
Well, we're one all. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well?
Yeah.
So we've got to, we've got a tiebreaker question, Veena.
Okay. Well, I might have to revert back to the question that still remains hanging.
Yeah.
And unanswered. So rack your brains again. Sam did talk about the element that we must have.
What can we
replace? But then when we talk about making of green steel, what is it that I might have said that if we were to remove that, and if we wanted to make green steel, that would be our goal. We would want to remove this material, which is considered such a traditional form of providing, of course, you know, perhaps could be in some instances energy. It could be the carbon, it could be all these important things that a steelmaker would go, but come on, I need the carbon in the process of making steel. I have to, how can I get rid of this?
Is it something to do with heating the...
Is it coal? Mm. Oh my goodness. This is what happens.
When
you have a big breakfast. This is what happens.
And the producers are cheering.
You can't see the pom-poms in the studio. Vina, thank you so much. I think that really stretched us.
That was good. That was very, very
that
good.
That really stretched us. We are absolutely delighted.
I enjoyed that.
Well, we loved having you. I think we've just got to try and figure out a way to come and visit.
Yeah.
And see your microfactory. But you have really, as Will said, you have really inspired us and you've given us so much to think about in terms of manufacturing, but also what we can do at an individual and community level. So thank you so much for your time, Vina.
Thank you, Mariama. If anyone's interested, absolutely, the videos are there on the Smart Centers website. We hope you guys can come and visit. But any of these things, if it tweaks some interest and people want to actually have a little bit of a sneak peek, please feel free to jump on the Smart Centers website.
That's incredible. Thank you, Vina.
Thank you very much.
Well, I really hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as we did. It was fantastic to have Vina in the studio with us talking about her research and all the innovation that she's involved with at the University of New South Wales. We've already thanked Vina, so it leaves me to thank Will, who our PhD student, who again facilitated the conversation brilliantly. Will, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Brilliant to have you with us once again. And we can't really end the podcast without thanking my fabulous co-presenter, Sam. Sam.
Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, never a chore. Great to see you. Thanks for being here again. And all that's left for me to do is to thank you, our listeners. I hope you're able to tune in for our next episode of Zwittering On. If you'd like to find out more about our work, you can follow us on our socials or go to our website, saltersinstitute.org.